Well, hello, hello, my ghoulish friends. My name is Billy Diamond, and welcome to another episode of the Branding for Entertainers podcast. This is episode number 21, the Halloween 2021 episode. And I do want to make mention before we get started here that in the future, I will be doing less and less interviews and focusing a lot more on teaching you, the audience, more about branding. But in the meantime, I really hope you'll stay tuned and enjoy this episode. Yep. 1, 2, 3, 4. Whether you're a fan of Harry Houdini or not, his name has become legendary. He was a performer who created spark and major publicity, and because of it, he actually turned himself into a brand. And he's a brand that we all still know even today. But my question is this: was he everything that he claimed to be throughout his publicity and his PR stunts that he did? Well, many would say that he had a huge ego, and that ego permitted him to exaggerate the facts quite a bit. Don't know if that's true or not, but we'll talk about that a little bit today. But while we are talking about facts, let me tell you this. Here's what we do know about Houdini. He planted a brand perception in the minds of his audience. And after all, isn't that what branding is all about? Perception. It's about what people think of us, even long after we leave the stage and pack up, go home, etc. So again, here's what we know. He reiterated the perception that he was the greatest escape artist, magician, and entertainer that the world would know. And that perception with an audience, or perhaps it's even folklore, it still lives on today. And my guest on this episode is Dean Carnegie, and he's been on the podcast before, and he is also known as the Magic Detective because of his tremendous knowledge and dedication when it comes to magic history and things magic related. Now, he's a sought-after expert, but I also get to call him my friend, and we have him on the podcast here today. And I do want to say this, that this episode, it goes beyond magicians and magic, so if you're some other sort of entertainer, that's okay. I promise you, you're going to enjoy this just as much as a magician will. So we're going to dive into the perception of branding here, and we're going to peel back the curtain a little bit, and we'll talk with Dean, the Magic Detective, about Houdini's publicity. And then later, we're going to talk a little bit about how you can take ideas from Houdini's playbook and create your own brand perception with your buying audience and your live audience too. So I hope that you enjoy this episode with my guest, the Magic Detective. Hey, welcome Dean, and thank you so much for being with us once again here on the Branding for Entertainers podcast.
And my pleasure. I'm very happy to be here, Billy, with you tonight to talk about Houdini and marketing and related things.
Yeah. Hey, fantastic. And, you know, and we're in October, and Houdini died October 31st, 1926. I thought it would only be appropriate that we actually do this particular episode in the month of October and kind of celebrate magic and to celebrate Houdini. So that's kind of a cool thing, I believe. Before we go into talking about Houdini and his publicity, I do have to mention this to everyone that's listening, and that is that you are also a full-time performer.
That's correct. Yep.
So I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here right out of the gate. I hope that's okay. Have you ever personally performed or recreated any of Houdini's stunts? And if so, how did it go?
Oh, yeah. I've done quite a few of his stunts. As a matter of fact, a few years back, there's a website called atlasobscura.com. And the chapter that's in Washington, D.C. approached me and asked me if I could actually do a recreation of Houdini's show as part of a Houdini in Washington thing that they were putting on. So I created about 30 minutes of escapes with handcuffs and rope and different things. And we did it actually in a McPherson Square Park in downtown Washington. It was interesting because all the attendees for the thing were there, but because it was in a park, everybody that was walking by started to come by and watch what was happening. And before we knew it, we had this huge crowd of people watching me escape from rope and handcuffs and you name it. And it was a blast. It was really fun to do.
Let me ask, because of that, you had mentioned that it was in a park and the people just kind of wandered by and then they stopped. Was that a lot of the allure with, you know, obviously Houdini did a lot of publicity in advance and he had advanced people go out for him. But yeah, do you think that was a lot of the allure? I mean, you look at some of these pictures of Houdini back in the day, and I mean, he'd be hanging upside down from a straitjacket off the side of a building. And you just look, and as far as the eye could see, you could just see people. So I guess my question is what was it about even your experience that you did with recreating some of Harry Houdini's stuff? What do you think the allure is there?
Yeah, well, I think escapes in general have, they're so unusual. It's not like something you see every day, but people are familiar with the objects. They've seen, you know, handcuffs before, whether they've, you know, held them in their own hands, but they know police use handcuffs and this kind of thing. And rope, people are familiar with that. And when you give them an opportunity to actually, like in my case, we did a 100-foot rope tie, where the audience was the ones tying me up, it gets them involved in it as well. So they become part of the whole event. And I think, you know, because of the unusualness of it, I think that stops people right there. I mean, if you're walking through a park and all of a sudden you see a guy wrapped in rope, you know, you're going to be like, what is that? I have got to see what's going on. So there's a little bit of allure. And obviously with Houdini, because he was initially a magician, but then they switched to doing just escapes, I think that had a great deal to do with what he was doing. But there's an underlying technique, an underlying marketing method that he used beyond just the escapes.
And we'll talk about that here in just a little bit, some of those techniques. I'll let you share that. But in the meantime, do you mind just recapping for some people that may not have heard the other episode that you were on? Just tell them really briefly how it is that you got started in magic.
Well, it all happened, both magic and Houdini happened at the same time. It began with the famous movie starring Tony Curtis about Houdini. And I had seen it. I had seen parts of it over the years, you know, when we were traveling or something, I would see it on the TV, but I never really watched the whole movie until I was 8 years old. The movie was going to be on television. It was like back then we had like at 4 o'clock when you got home from school, they would have an afternoon movie and they were showing this one day they were showing Houdini starring Tony Curtis. And I sat there, watched the entire thing and was spellbound and just completely overwhelmed with it. And I think it was the next day I went to the local bookstore and I bought a book on Houdini and a book on magic. And it's my fascination has continued to this day.
That's very interesting. And I also remember us talking a little bit about that. I find it very coincidental that you watched the Tony Curtis movie and we're talking about publicity and PR. And I just realized the irony of this is that even if some of the stuff that even Houdini did to publicize himself may have been BS, well, we're talking about that movie. There's parts of that that are kind of BS too, right?
It's a fictionalized account of his life, but yet at the same time, it's pretty accurate. I mean, they take some liberties in some areas, but really, except for at the ending, the way he died.
Yeah, that's the part I'm talking about.
Really, the rest of it is pretty accurate.
I think that's the thing that a lot of people remember is, oh, yeah, he died doing an escape, right? So that's what they remember.
Yeah.
Tell the listeners, because they might not be in the magic or they might not know, how did Houdini really die?
Well, he did not die doing a trick. In the movie, he dies trying to do the Chinese water torture cell. But the reality was he'd been doing that trick for years. And successfully and never had an issue. But he died essentially from a ruptured appendix. And back in his time, they didn't have the antibiotics that they have today. And peritonitis set in, which is a poison in the bloodstream. And that's what got him. And unfortunately, they had no medication that could counter it.
Houdini wasn't always a household name or a legend. In fact, it's quite hard for anybody else, I shouldn't say anybody else, but it's really hard for people like you and I or other entertainers that might be listening to really become famous or have that legendary status like Harry Houdini has gained. In fact, he has his own word in the dictionary, right? To pull a Houdini, right? Which is kind of amazing. So it's amazing to even talk to people today and they still know that name and how famous it is. Can you tell us his origins and how he became as good as he became when it comes to his publicity and planning that amazing perception in the minds of people? Because he was so super good at that.
It's interesting when you look at Houdini's career from that perspective, from the publicity perspective, because he wasn't always, as you said, he wasn't always famous. He had a number of years where he was working in dime museums and in circuses. And when I say circuses, I'm not talking like Ringling Brothers, much smaller circuses, the Welsh Brothers Circus and things like that. And he was having to do double duty besides doing his own, you know, his own act of magic. He might have to be a clown or he might have to do a mind reading thing or other acts. So he didn't have that marketing ability yet. A lot of it was trial and error over time. And I remember reading a book about Houdini being in Canada and trying an escape from handcuffs on a horse. And the horse ran away with him on there. And eventually he got out of the cuffs. But by the time he got out of the cuffs, all the newspaper people had left.
Oh, wow.
So you can see that he hadn't quite established, you know, here's what I need to do to get the publicity. He knew, if I do this escape, it will work. But he wasn't quite there yet. And then when he does hit that time, it happens because of Martin Beck, who was a theater impresario. And Martin Beck told Houdini, he said, here's what you need to do. Get rid of the magic. Stick with the escapes. Do the trunk trick. That stuff's unique. That stuff's original. I can sell that. The magic, there's a million magicians. Stick with the escapes, and we can do something with that. So that's essentially what Houdini did. Now, he didn't actually dump all the magic. There were a few key things that he kept in his repertoire. But for the most part, his show became mostly escapes at that point. And because of that, because they were so unique, he had something now that he could promote. Instead of just going into a vaudeville theater and doing the show, he could take his act outside of the theater. He could go to a police station and challenge the police to lock him into handcuffs or to put him in a jail cell, and he could get out. That would get front page publicity. If you think about a comedian that's working in vaudeville, what are they going to do? They just have their, you know, their 10-minute set on stage. But Houdini was able to take his show beyond the stage into the public, and this was something nobody was doing. Nobody had even thought of it. And it really propelled him from Nowheresville to the top of his profession. You know, here he is. He's at the theater, so there's a legitimacy there. But then he takes it outside. And also that gives him more credibility in the escape world. If he can escape from a police station, well, you know, this guy must be able to do anything.
Sure. Something you said earlier, you said about him and the horses and the handcuffs. And by the time he got out, the newspapers, all that, they were gone. The press was gone.
Yeah.
It reminded me of another story that I think you can tell probably better than I could. And that's the when he used to do the milk can, and maybe he even did it with the Chinese water torture cell, is he'd just have people patiently waiting in the audience, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was – well, see, now you're stumbling upon one of his techniques, mm-hmm. which was the power of timing. And it's this technique doesn't apply just to a trick, but I'll give you the example in the trick. So the milk can escape is this thing that looks like an old-style milk can or milk churn, and it would be filled with water, and he would get inside, and it have – they put a lid on and there were locks all the way around it. And then a curtain cabinet would go around this, and the audience would be there, and they would already, they couldn't hold their breath for as long as he did. So they're sitting there watching this curtain, nothing's moving. And they're just, you know, a minute goes by, 2 minutes, they're just sweating because they're like, this man has drowned inside this tank of, or this container of water. When in reality, Houdini was out pretty quickly. And he was actually sitting on top of the can reading the newspaper. And often his assistants would have to say, hey, Harry, turn the pages a little quieter. People can hear you. And he would say, you know, make the orchestra play louder. So, you know, but he was using the timing because he knew The longer he sat there, the crazier the audience would go. And then at the last possible minute, that moment of just pure tension, he'd throw a little bit of water on his face and he'd burst out from the curtain and pandemonium would proceed.
Yeah. That's showmanship there, huh?
Oh, yeah. No question.
Something tells me I don't think our audiences would be willing to wait that long for us these days. So I think we, when it comes to timing, we have to have other techniques that we use, right? I find that amusing about what worked then doesn't work now. But here's the other cool part to that, and the irony of this is that a lot of the publicity and a lot of really out-of-the-box thinking, if you do that, that can apply. And you can take a lot of those same Houdini principles and just kind of modernize them a little bit. So we're not talking the show, but we're talking like techniques that he used in PR and things like that. And we'll talk about that here in a second. But let me ask you, do you think, was he arrogant? I get the impression that he was kind of this arrogant kind of person. And maybe he wasn't. Maybe he was just really self-confident. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll tell you, when I first started reading about Houdini and coming up into magic, the common thread was that Houdini was an egotist. This is kind of everybody's pretty much thought that way, I think. And one day I got to thinking about it and I was like, you know, he certainly had an ego, but that goes with anybody that's in show business. However, I think a lot of what he did was mistaken. A lot of it, I think, was jealousy from other people, but what he was doing essentially was keeping his name in front of the public. He was using every technique he could think of to keep his name out there. Now, you know, if he had his name out there and his name trumped somebody like Howard Thurston or Harry Keller, or, well, of course, Keller was retired by then. But if he had, you know, got his name above others, I can see where people would get ticked off. But, you know, his thing was, I want to stay working. I want to be on top, and I'm going to use every technique I can to do that. So in essence, he was a good businessman, and really, he was creating a brand before we even knew what that word was.
Yeah, you're so right about that. I mean, he basically wrote the book on publicity. And hey, speaking of that, you and I spoke some time back, and you said, I'm working on a Houdini book. Are you willing to share that with us and expand on that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you how it came about. I was watching this interview on TV with Anthony Hopkins, the actor, the guy who played Hannibal Lecter. Mm-hmm. And they were interviewing him and they asked him, you know, what is your key to success? Or do you have a motto or this kind of thing? And he said this, he said, I live by this motto, which is be bold, and mighty forces will come to your aid.
And I believe that be bold and mighty forces will come to your aid. And I believe that about everything, you know, so I don't do anything that's conventional.
And I heard that and I went, whoa, that is a really cool saying, a really cool quote. Right after I thought that, I went, wait a minute. Be bold and mighty forces will come to your aid. That's Houdini. That is, in essence, what he was doing throughout his whole career. And what that did was that set me on a path to start uncovering what made him famous. What did he do besides the magic, besides the escapes? What was he doing to become famous? And boldness was one of the first things. Now, if you look up boldness in the encyclopedia, it's going to tell you that it means fearlessness or showing a courageous spirit, and that's Houdini. That's the image that he was projecting. And I thought, there's something here. And I began to peel back lots of different things that he did. Like I said, beyond the escapes, there were just many techniques. Like, for example, his name, okay? His real name was Eric Weiss. And then he decided when he was young, he read a book about Robert Houdin, the great French magician. And it was actually a friend of his that suggested that if he took the name Houdin and added an I to the end, it would be Houdini, which they claimed meant like Houdin. So he went with Harry Houdini because a lot of his friends called him Harry. So he went with Harry Houdini. But over time, he eventually just went with Houdini, the one word name. And I realized, wait a minute, this is something that so many famous people, Elvis.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, he's Elvis Presley, but everybody called him Elvis. Frank Sinatra, you know, there's so many people. You can just say one name and you know exactly who it is. This, I realized, anybody could do this. Well, I shouldn't say anybody because it doesn't work for everybody, but there are people out there that have a clever name, or they may have a nickname, and that nickname is more memorable than their regular name. That's what you use to become known where you are. Use that nickname, or use like nowadays we hear about J-Lo, you know, Jennifer Lopez.
Sure.
J-Lo is a way better name to remember than Jennifer Lopez.
Yes.
You know, so it's that power of the one word name. And if somebody can do that, a performer or even a regular person just looking for, you know, to get ahead in a job and you want to become known, if you've got a name that people remember,
yep,
that's going to take you a lot further than having a name that, you know, that is easily forgettable.
Yeah, that is something I even cover with some branding clients and things like that is the name. And, you know, of course, that's just one little element of it. But you're so right. You know, it used to be an entertainment that it was pretty common, you know, years ago, that change your name, right? Something different that would be a little bit more marketable or a little bit more memorable. And we don't see that as much today, but I agree. Like, if you're known as that and it's an easier name to remember. Yeah, because here's the deal. We don't have millions of dollars like companies like McDonald's or Amazon to really push it out there. So we have to try to do everything that we can to get them to remember us. And of course, that's an easy one right there. It's like, if it's an easy name to remember, like you said, J-Lo, super easy, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are so many of them over time. You think about Groucho.
Sure.
If you weren't smaller than me, I'd flog the daylights out of it. But I'm bigger than you.
Well, that's another reason.
I mean, his real name was Julius Marx, but he went with Groucho. His brother, Harpo. You remember those? Or Britney.
Yeah.
Sure. You don't have to say Britney Spears. You just say Britney, everybody knows who that is. Beyonce. I didn't even know what her last name is. I just know where's Beyonce. Everybody. Jewel. Another great one. Madonna.
And I think most people would say, yeah, but they're famous. So of course you remember them. But I think that we're using those names long before they ever became famous.
Those names helped them to become famous.
Absolutely. Let's talk about your book a little bit. Are you in the planning stages of getting this out? And if so, when?
Yes and yes. Let me just give you a little rundown. So I wrote the book, I'm going to say a number of years ago, because I don't want to tell you the exact date because I'm embarrassed that it's been sitting for so long. But as I began to read through this, because I wrote the book, seriously, I wrote the book in a couple weeks. And the only thing I hadn't done was the last chapter. And it's been sitting all this time because I couldn't figure out how to do the last chapter. And the last chapter had to do with social media, because Houdini didn't have social media, but I had to figure out, how do you incorporate this? Because he was a media superstar. You've got to be able to address social media, but how does it fit in the context of Houdini? Well, I've since figured out how to do that. But long story short, as I was going through the book, I was like, well, you know what? This book could use a bit of a rewrite, mainly because some of the references I have in here, I don't know, you know, some of them are a little old, let's say. Even Groucho, for an example, is a little bit of a dated, most people know who that is, but I'd rather have some names in here that people, you know, millennials and things like that can identify with and go, oh, okay, I understand that. That makes sense.
Some of them are real old, and let's face it, we just did music from the 80s in some of this particular podcast, and just old music in general. So when you say Groucho, I guarantee you people don't know who that is. But I think it's really important that we stay relevant and we are not these old farts that people see as ancient, but we can bring something to the table. And I think you got that and you're doing that. So tell me a little bit more.
So I've got to do a rewrite on the book and then get it published. Now, initially, I was thinking around Christmas time, but I think I may take a page out of Houdini's book and actually bring the book out around Houdini's birthday.
And of course, all listeners might not know. So when is Houdini's birthday?
It's March 24th. Yeah, like I said, if I tie it into that and then do a little bit of a media tour with it, I think it'll be good. You know, because I'm a magician, if I do a media tour talking about the books, hey, guess what? I'm going to probably do some escapes.
Of course.
But at the same time, I want to be able to share the book with people because the essence of the book is it's here's what Houdini did to become famous, but here's how you can take those techniques, those things that he did, and use them in your own careers or your own lives to move ahead. So whether you're looking to become the president of your local Rotary Club, or you want to get a promotion in your job, or if you're a performer and you want to move up in your career, there'll be techniques in the book that you can use to do that.
I think you just beat me to my next question. There's tons of Houdini books out there. I mean, just tons of them. And I was going to ask, what does really make this one different? And you just answered that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you are right. There are tons of Houdini books. I mean, he's been written about more than any other magician in history. And this takes it from a different perspective. It gives you history. So there's that part of it, but it breaks down the techniques. It starts with the history. Here's what he did. And then here's what the technique is. And here's how you can apply it. And then it finishes with the opposite technique, which is the danger. For example, with boldness. Boldness is great until you step over the line into arrogance. And let's be honest, Houdini stepped over that line more than once, but you don't want to do that. So in every chapter, it tells you, you know, whether it's the chapter on timing or boldness or whatever it is, it gives you an example of here's what you don't want to do.
Sure. So you give them that cautionary tale. This is what he did, and you might want to sustain from that.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. You've kind of already covered this. Who's the audience for this book? You know, obviously it's magicians, but you didn't write this thing for magicians or even specifically even entertainers in general. It sounds like it covers the gamut, like anybody who has an interest in taking these ideas from Houdini's playbook. I keep on coming back to that. I like that word, Houdini's playbook, and it kind of is, right?
Yeah. When I first started working on the book, one of the first things that came to me was, you know, who's this for? And if I'm writing a book for magicians, I'm stopping. I'm not going to finish this book because no offense to the magicians out there, but you're talking about, I might be able to sell 1,000 copies of a book. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of work to sell 1,000 copies of a book. And you know what? There's so many wonderful writers and authors and magic historians that do that. And I love them for doing it. But I was like, I would like to make some money off of this book and get the word out to as many people as possible. So how do I write that book from that, you know, in a way that gets a broader audience? And that's when I began to realize that Houdini's techniques weren't just for the performer. They could be broken down and applied to anybody that wants to move ahead in their life or careers.
That's fantastic. How can listeners actually find out a little bit more about it? Do you have anything out there now? Or
yeah, actually, if you go to my website, which is HoudiniMarketingBook.com, you can go in, you sign up. What'll happen if you sign up, you just give your name and email address. I'll send you an excerpt from one of the chapters, and it just puts you on a list so that you'll be one of the first ones notified when the book comes out. Sadly, I put this website up, 4 or 5 years ago, expecting to finish the book 4 or 5 years ago. And unfortunately, life has a way of stepping in, and sure. I got distracted. But now I'm ready to tackle the book and finish the book and get it out there so people can take advantage of the many wonderful things inside the book.
That's fantastic. So just in confidence then, if they go once again to HoudiniMarketingBook.com, they can sign up. I think sometimes people are a little skeptical. What can you do to reassure there? You're just using it as a platform to say, hey, I'm going to remind you when this book's coming out, et cetera.
Yeah, I have no intention of spamming people. It's just, like I said, you get a free excerpt from the book, and it puts you on a list that just says when the book is done, I'll send you an email saying, hey, the book is done if you're interested in ordering. But I'm not going to sell your address or anything like that. And I'm not going to spam you to death. I just, you know, it's just a way of collecting a few names to let the most interested people know ahead of time.
That's great. The listeners have heard it here first. So if you're projecting for March, they can get on that list right away. And I think that'd be exciting that you're seeing people kind of raise their hand and say, yeah, I'm definitely interested in this. And I would love to have this. Dean, thank you so much for being a part of this podcast. I'm looking forward to this book coming out, and you always have such great knowledge and things that I know the listeners can really glean from. So thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. My pleasure, and have a great one.
You too. Well, hey, gang, just a reminder that if you enjoyed the Branding for Entertainers podcast, and this particular episode, please do me a favor. Go like and subscribe, and also please comment on this episode. I want to create a dialogue with you, and I want to be able to answer some questions back and forth, and also see what you like and what you don't like. That's the only way we can grow as entertainers. So again, my name's Billy Diamond. Thank you for listening to the podcast, and we'll catch you on the next episode.